pursuing in friendship the wicked. That's a different, that's not wisdom. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Awake to righteousness and do not sin, for some do not have the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame." Now, of course, here he's talking about the people. I thought for a minute that was my phone. I thought, oh dear, no one's going to be able to turn it off. So the thing with this is that he's talking about people who don't believe in the resurrection from the dead. So he's talking about a theological problem. And it's the perspective that results in the eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die perspective. And he's saying evil company corrupts good habits, right? Like you are befriending people who do not believe right things about God, and consequently you're corrupted. This is something that comes up. He's saying that the Corinthians were friends with dangerous people, people that they should not have been friends with. In friendship, it seems that usually the lowest common denominator wins, right? Like, it's just don't befriend a wicked man. So it doesn't mean don't be an acquaintance of a wicked man, you know, your unbelieving neighbor that you want to share the gospel with. But just don't think that evangelism to wicked people is done through friendship and camaraderie. You don't have camaraderie with people who are going to hell, with wicked people. We don't have anything in common in that way. So do not pursue the wicked as friends. Do not be friends with those who are not anchored in truth. This is because, fundamentally speaking, friendship is a side-by-side game. You will be companions. The point is people who share bread along the journey. Companion it means from Latin, sharing bread together, breaking of bread together. Which, just a side note, who do you break bread together with all the time on the way? All of the saints, the people in your church body. These are your companions. This is your friends on a fundamental level. The word companion comes from that, and you have a set group of people who are already by default your companions. And beyond that, people that you share interests in, that you're pursuing different things, that you get to know them on the journey to do different things. Friendship, when I said it's a side-by-side game, it is not like erotic love, in that the members of friendship are not staring into each other's eyes. Like, they're looking at something else together. They're not pursuing each other in the same way that lovers would pursue each other. They're looking at something else together. In friendship, things come out slowly and incidentally about each other through casual fellowship and conversation, where you can know someone for years and think you know them well, and then they think to tell you a story, and they're like, oh, I should fill in the backstory there. I never knew that. Like, when did that happen? Or even Sue telling us her story. She had to stop to tell us her story for most of us to know that, even though we've known her for a long time. So that is something that happens in friendship. Background gets filled in incidentally in other ways. It is not company that we have with each other on the road to just anywhere, but company on the way to heaven, right? The goal is heaven. This is the company that we have. The company, the joy, the fellowship is incidental to what we're actually pursuing, right? You don't pursue friends isolated from where you're going. You don't, like, I just need friends. I don't really care who they are or what they're up to. I just need friends in the abstract. Friendship is a gift, but it is a gift that we need to be wise with. So this is a smoking hot passage from James 4:4. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Like, it's a very clear passage. And I think Hannah right here, didn't you just make a beautiful printable of this passage because it's so funny? You know, like, there's all these little beautiful mountain scenes, printables of Bible verses, but why don't they pick this kind? Adulterers and adulteresses. I love it. But the point is here that friendship with the world is enmity with God. And there are those, even here in our community, who want to minimize what we would call cultural warfare with the world. When we would say, no, we are in a collision with the world on what they want and what we want, we're not friends, right? We're saying the world is not our friend. But this passage makes it clear that it never should be. So we know many people who think that when you talk like there is a war with the culture or the world here now, that you're just kind of, it's an unfortunately unchristian and unfriendly and unevangelistic approach to the world. Like, as though it is just silly and dangerous to assume enmity with the world, that we are creating conflict when there does not need to be any. You know, that by talking like we're enemies, we're making a conflict when we could have just all been friends and gotten along here. But far from calling people who have befriended the world skilled evangelists, the Bible calls them adulterers, right? It's not a thing to go befriend the world for the gospel, right? You befriend the world to cheat on God, right? It's not something that you're supposed to be doing. So what about friendship with God? How do we do that? John 15:9. This is 9 through several verses after that, longer than just 9. As the Father loved me, I also loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. Right? There it is, in a nutshell. How do you be God's friend? How do you be a friend of Jesus? You do whatever he commands you. Right? Just whatever. Whatever it is, you do it. That's how you be God's friend. And then he goes on to say, no longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things that I heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you. You think, you know, when you go out to choose friends, Christ chose you as a friend and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give you. These things I command you, that you love one another. So you can see in this passage how much our friendship with Christ chose us, befriended us, and how much our friendship with him is the foundation for how we are equipped to love one another. Because we're obeying him, we love each other, we lay down our lives for each other, we're following him, and we are both friends with him and friends with all those who are also friends with him. We have this fellowship. So here we have two things. Total obedience to God is friendship with God. Friendship to the world is enmity with God. Worldliness is therefore not at all a little issue, and it's not a little issue in your friendships. And we should all know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that obedience to God, total obedience to God, as was described in John there, is not the behavior that will create friendship with the world. They hate it, right? We know that. They hate it. When you are unabashedly planning to obey God, the world hates that. And they make no secret of it. So that's back to reference the thing about thinking we are creating the enmity. We really are not. It's something that is there, that God established. So our fundamental goal in friendship should first be to be a good friend. I don't mean by that you remember everyone's birthday and become that person who always brings the coffee at the most fortuitous moment. Though those are good things. Nothing bad about those things. I mean to be a good choice for a friend. To think of who you are. To think like, if some woman like chose me as someone to pursue as a friend, would God say, yes, good pick. Go for that. You know, like, I approve that choice. Be that person who God would want other women pursuing as a friend. This is done primarily, obviously, in your relationship to God in his word. Obey God, pursue God, and be a friend to him, right? You do that first, and you are equipped to be a godly friend to other women. This is the best way to be prepared to have good and godly friendships. It is also the best way to not be going into friendships or what you could call the friendship market needy, right? You're not going out to find a friend in desperation because someone needs to help you. Friendship cannot give your life joy. It cannot give you purpose. It cannot save you. It is just an embellishment. It's just beauty on the way. It is a gift from God. It's just something else that he gives us, but it's not the primary point. It's not our goal. You're not missing joy or purpose if you don't have a dear friend. It is a good point, but it's not the only point of life. It's a good gift, but not the only point of life. So I warned you that I was going to go ahead and be controversial. So I warn you again. I would like to encourage you all to look at your entertainment as friendship. Look at the people that you are spending time with. Before there were shows to veg out to, people had interesting people over to visit and practice hospitality, right? You get to know someone. Or they did without. Or they read books. But shows fill in a role for us that friends used to fill in, right? Like observing other people's lives and kind of seeing things that other people are doing. So think about the entertainment that you partake of. Is it a friend of God or is it his enemy? Right? It does not matter that it is mostly made up. Right? It doesn't matter. It has a shaping effect on you. In most of these cases, you actually know the answer, but you don't want to look at it head on. And that's what I said. If it bothers you what I'm saying, I hope that you will just talk to the Lord about it, think about it, and don't just think about it. Is your poor company corrupting your good morals? Something that I have noticed is that, you know, shows, it's a whole hypothetical world that they're building, right? They'll build all kinds of like sexual tension that the natural thing is for everyone to want that to be relieved, but there would be no godly way for anyone involved to relieve that. And here we are, a bunch of Christian people who would know that fornication is against God's plan and is not something that he approves of, and yet you could be secretly in your heart hoping that this made-up friend of yours would fall into that sin, right? That I'm sitting here watching this, imagining a world where God is not, where the rules are not God's, longing for someone to get together in a way that God hates. If that is happening, that you are being lured into friendship with the world. You are being easily influenced. And it is a shame how often this happens when it is imaginary. If your real friends knew that you were hanging out with like the sorority girls every weekend, like you just couldn't get enough of the news of what was going on at the frat parties, they would all confront you about that, right? But they don't know what you're watching, binge watching on Netflix by yourself. They don't know what you're hanging out with. So they're not telling you, why are you doing this? What is wrong with you? And the world is doing this very intentionally in entertainment, right? They fold in licentiousness or immorality in ways that lead us along in friendship with it, right? Here's the funny gay man, you know, and we've already thought he's very clever. He's very funny. He's very witty. So now when he is lusting after another man, we're laughing with him, right? Now we've come all along, and now we're all like, oh, funny, you know, that's great. So have you been influenced by this or not? You know, like, are you being an imaginary friend is corrupting your morals? And that is an amazingly shameful thing. Like, just let's not do that. Are you intrigued by lives of full of filthy language and violence and meth? Like, is this something you just can't get enough of watching? Somebody told, you're falling into a trap that is being laid for you. Somebody told my brother-in-law that, like, oh, I think this is about Breaking Bad. Like, oh, it's just amazing to just watch, like, what sin does to people, like, watch the development of the kid. You know, it's all like, I can put Christian terms on this. I can say it's just what sin does over time, and it's heavy, and, like, and I'm seeing all this. And he was like, you know, if you're really passionate about what sin does in people's lives, come on down to our Meal with Jesus Bible study, where we're dealing with the people whose lives have actually been ruined by this kind of thing and who smell like urine and are a total train wreck. If you're fascinated by sin, why are you dealing with it in an imaginary realm rather than rolling up your sleeves and getting involved in the broken lives around you that need Christ? Like, you don't need to be entertained by sin and its destruction. Like, that is friendship with the world, right? That is going along with it as though this is funny and for our entertainment. The trouble, like with something like Breaking Bad, it's a very specific effort at an anti-hero. The goal is to present to you someone like, oh, see their humanity, how this is actually the bad guy is the person you sympathize with, and it's interesting because you kind of, you know, it messes you all up and it's all interesting. But the thing is, we don't need to sympathize with the wicked. The trouble with the wicked has never been that they weren't human, right? We don't need to see their humanity. The trouble has always been the opposite. Their humanity is all that they are. So do not be a friend of the wicked, no matter how fake they are. There is nothing there but enmity with God. Be a friend of God. This is incidentally why we do not, and in our house, allow our children to become friends with movie characters. Though she be animated and fake, a rebellious mermaid is a bad friend, right? Like, though this is an entirely made-up proposition, we don't want you shaped by that person. We don't want you thinking along those lines. We don't want you exploring that world and imagining yourself there. That is a foolish friend. Though it's an imaginary kingdom, Elsa is a fool and an enemy of God, right? It's like, no, she's dumb. That's not what we're doing. We do allow our children to see many of these movies. We're not trying to keep them isolated from being able to judge this kind of thing. But we won't allow them to befriend them. No binge watching or studying the characters or wearing the clothes of the princess or pretending to be them or talking in their voices, right? Or longing to be like her or singing her songs. I can tell you that as catchy as Let It Go was, no one was allowed to sing it in our house. Which does make me laugh because I was like, a lot of people will be like, oh my word, you can never stop that, Let It Go. And I was like, man. We were just like, team meeting, that's not allowed. Like, we're done here. Like, it's over. It's over with Let It Go. Like, I don't ever want to hear that. And the reason we said, and our kids agree with us, so it's not like an oppressive regime. We just said, this is not our people. This is not songs of our people, right? This is not what we believe. This is not who we are. We talked about what it said. It's foolish. It's just a catchy tune. That's it, right? Let's really let it go. Let's just be done with that altogether. This is not a song of our people. So deliberately, there are times when we would deliberately did not choose those friends, right? You're like, oh, we met that person, and we are really not choosing that as a friend for you. And Barbie is another example. Barbie is a worldly friend, right? It doesn't really matter how fake this thing is. You can be affected by it. What influences she uses to urge girls towards worldliness and not towards godliness. And some of the American Girl dolls are foolish girls, right? The more recent ones, they are. They're total dorks. Like, well, you're like, what's going on here? Do I really need to, like, read all the books that came with American Girl doll before I'll approve it? There's a lot of stupidness in those things. You cannot just take the world's word for what an age-appropriate friend is for your children, right? You can't just be like, oh, that's good. You go be shaped by that person, hang out with that person. So, just a reminder, I did say I was going to be controversial, so I just putting that back in there. You know I know that I said things that everyone doesn't agree on. So if we are to be wise about choosing friends proactively, how do we proceed? Here are a few tips. The first one from my great-grandma, who passed this along with a rule to never buy cheap shoes. Both were great. Were great tips. One, when you get to a new area or are in a new season of looking for a friend for whatever reason. If you're like, just got married, you're in a different phase of life, just had a baby, you're like, I need a new friend, I need help, I need something. Whenever that time comes, get to know everyone and then choose your friends. Don't just jump into friendship with the first person who shows any kind of willingness to be your friend. Obviously, you can be friendly to everyone. Just don't jump into a level that you're not actually sure you're going to want to maintain. Overly fast developing friendships almost never last, right? That, like, I met someone at a conference and we just had so much fun for that. You know, like, it's just like flying off to a deep level of friendship and then burning out quickly. Good friendships are a plodding thing. One thing that I would say to women is that it is great to get to know people in different ways, but I'm sure we've all been in a position before of like an overly fast startup. Do you know what I mean? Like, where you're like, I'm just not sure I can keep up with this. Like, this is like, it's not that you don't like the person. You just feel a sense of need that is beyond your capacity to fill or fit into your normal life. Like, you're like, I can't possibly maintain this. In that case, just be wise at the outset. Like, just don't get in. It's way, way, way better to be awkward at the beginning than it is to try to break off a friendship that you had no reason to start at that level. At the beginning. Occasionally, I know that I've had times where someone's like, we should get our kids together for a play date, we should hang out. Like, this happened to me more when my kids were really little. And in those cases, just be like, let's meet at a park and let's have other moms there too. Like, let's get to know each other in context that is not like we're gonna now be going out to lunch once a week and having coffee dates all the time. And you know, like, there's different levels of friendship, and if it is feeling like it's beyond your capacity, be wise at the outset at what you get involved in. Some people may be more than you can handle, and it is okay to both see it, acknowledge it, and avoid it, right? It is okay to say, this is the level on which I can be friends with you and maintain that, because sometimes it is, I'm sure we all know that feeling where you're like, now it's just really awkward, right? Like, now I'm just not returning phone calls or whatever. Try to avoid that at the outset. Okay. Because of the same kind of principle, we tell our children that their classmates are not their friends, which I know that's funny, but we do. We say they're not your friends, they're your coworkers, and they may incidentally be your friends. Like, you may also develop friendships here, but the fact that you're in the class with them is not the same thing as being friends. And this is really liberating, We're like, Daddy goes to work with lots of people, and he's kind to all of them, and he is gracious to them, but they are not his best buddies, right? You know, like, you just work alongside of these people. And it is, while it may sound distant, it is hugely liberating. They are free to be kind to everyone because you don't feel an obligation to maintain a close friendship with everyone. So if someone is unkind to you, it just goes in the file of something you should just overlook, not like this is a broken relationship, I have to fix it, I have to follow. And this becomes an especial temptation for later elementary girls, right? This is a special thing. The curating of broken friendships is a thing that they get involved in, right? So it's like so-and-so is crying over there because she said that so-and-so said this to her and that wasn't kind. So then there's the people gathered around them who will go find the girl who said the unkind thing to ferry the information back and forth. And we've always just said, just get out. Don't be part of it. Like, don't listen to it. Don't traffic in her feelings. Like, just get out of it as much as you can. Get out of it. Just because you are situationally near someone does not mean that you should be friends with them. And if you believe that there's an obligation to friendship, it's just an optical illusion. If you're to be wise, which we know you are to be wise in choosing your friends, how is it wise to take as friends whoever happens to be just enrolled alongside you? That is a zero level of discernment friendship, right? Like, it's like, just whoever is here is my friend. Now, I need to be clear that we do mean, like, friend on it, not like, who are you friendly to or who would you say good morning to. Like, we expect our kids to be gracious to people and to be friendly people, but not expecting a real reciprocal friendship with every person. As far as qualities of good friend choice go, the most telltale way to know that someone is a good choice for a friend is if you know that they are a friend of God's. You want friends who you know would do whatever God told them to do. You want friends who read God's word and apply it. Friends who are mortifying the flesh and living in the spirit, right? This is what you want from your friends. You want friends to be the kind of people that if they read in the word of God that they should be wearing big red bows on their head, would be exchanging big red bow patterns, right? This is the kind of friends that you want. Thank the Lord that's not in the scripture. We are called to something much nicer than that. We don't have to settle for that. But my point is, you want friends who are all in for God, who are like, always willing to apply it in their life, even when it may hurt. This is the kind of friend who may occasionally wound you faithfully, right? And that is a friend who is really pursuing God, and that is a good thing. Proverbs 27:6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Godly friendship is not a flattery affair. It is the faithfulness of iron sharpening iron. Be a friend who is willing to wound faithfully, and be a friend who appreciates a wound given in faith. The flattery kind of friendship is a friendship unto death. One of the best examples of this is Haman. He had friends too. Haman had good friends, and they were the worst. They took his envy on as their own. They heard his complaints and encouraged him to build the gallows on which he ended up hanging, right? He was hustling home with every bit of news to tell his wife and his friends. And they even called them his wise men, the people he went to for counsel. You know, like, oh, let me pour this out. So Esther 5:10 says, nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he sent and called for his friends and his wife Zeresh. Then Haman told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he advanced him above the officials and servants of the king. Moreover, Haman said, besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king in the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow, I am again invited by her, along with the king, yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate, right? He's totally open with how burning up with envy he is, right? He has friends, he has his wife. He's like, I need some wisdom. I'm just going to pour out to you how totally eaten up with envy I am. Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends, unanimous counsel, you know, all of his friends said, let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and in the morning suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet. Right? And the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made. Right? They flattered. They took on his grievance. They supported that you should be more important than him. You're justified to feel this way. You should be hurt. You should do this. And what did they do? They flattered him into death. Right? They flattered him and helped him along his way into falling into the trap that he laid. Job 17:5 says, "He who speaks flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children will fail." It's kind of a desperate thing. Don't speak flattery to your friends. This is a good time to mention something that we've explained to our children that we call fishhook friends, right? Be aware of your own heart. Sometimes you are drawn to a person simply because they know what kind of bait you will take, right? Sometimes that happens. They know what you like. They bait the hook, usually with some kind of flattery, and you go along and bite, right? That's how it works. With children, this is usually something like, "You are my best friend. Those other girls are mean to me. You aren't like them," right? I'm whispering something like, if you take the bait, which is very hard to not take the bait if you are also in second grade, you know? You're like, "You're my best friend? Are they all mean to you too?" Like, you know, it's a flattery thing. You're better than them. You're more, you know, whatever. The bait tastes sweet. I'm kinder. I'm more selfless. I'm more fun to be around. But what is the point of that kind of bait? And it is always the hook. It is always the hook within it. Once you've swallowed, this person has a lot more control over you than they ought to, right? There's a lot more control. They can withdraw their flattery, right? They can get you begging, doing anything to get it back. You know, like a wording like, "You can be next to me this time." This, actually, at Sabbath dinner, this was many years ago when it was a lot more younger kids. But it was like a pretty fierce rule that, like, you may not want to sit by any specific cousin. You're not allowed to want it. You have to just go sit, because you realize that this is like a whole little world where people can start being like, "Oh, I bring little candy that I hand out to whoever's next to me, and then everyone wants to sit by me, and then this is really," you know, it just is a very, it's not good for anyone involved in it. Like, we had to work to eliminate that, and thankfully that's no longer a problem. It was just one summer where we found out late what was happening. But the reality is that when someone wins your friendship with this kind of bait, they are in control of you in a way that they should not be. We suggest our children think about what kind of bait they are vulnerable to and why, and I suggest that you all think about that too. Anytime you have a friendship that is set up in some way in opposition to other people, this is probably happening, right? Anytime that it's like, "No one in this church really understands me except for you," right? It's like, "Oh, that's because I'm very wise. Let me come with you and continue to understand you better and better than everyone else." Or, "Those ladies are so cliquish, but we're really down to earth and welcoming." You know what I mean? Like, anything that is flattery on the intro is not a good idea. Notice what you are vulnerable to. Like, notice, like, just actually think about it. What is it that someone could say to you that would make you want to do anything to keep getting that kind of thing from them? And just preach to yourself about it. Recognize it. Look at it in the open light of day. What is happening here? Like, how did I start thinking that this was really important? Do you want everyone caring about who you had over for dinner? Do you know, does that matter? Like, is it something that's like, "Oh, I'm really working hard on my social media platform to make sure that it's really an important thing when people come to my house or when they're with me, that this is something that we use to manipulate other people," right? And I'm not saying that other people should be manipulated. I don't think they should. It should be fine. But I'm saying this does happen. It's not something that doesn't happen. It is something that happens among Christian women. So just try to recognize the temptation. If you are a manipulative person by nature, you may be baiting lots of hooks for lots of people. Think about that. One of my kids, because we talk about fishhook friends, had a trouble with a friend at school. And she was telling me about it. And I said, "Well, you know what that sounds like to me?" And she said, "Yeah." I just died laughing. She was like, "It's so funny to me." She was like, "Yeah, I know. I saw it. You know, like, I saw it coming for me. That someone is just trying to say, hey, like, she's really the worst. I want to be your friend now." You know, it's like, "No, thanks. Like, I'd rather not. Like, go take that somewhere else." When it comes to the common pitfalls of friendship, there's really just one, and it is sin, right? Envy is a disaster, but it's both in and out of friendship a disaster. Envy is. Neediness is a disaster. Friendship would be a great exchange of low-maintenance fellowship, right? It should just be we love each other in the Lord. Nobody's stressing out about whose birthday it was or how they forgot to ask about whatever was happening or whatever. Not a lot of... It should not be a friendship that has lots of terms and interest payments and fine print and things, right? That is a tempting thing to be like, no, but let's get this all in the paperwork so that you'll be in big trouble if you do anything with anyone else. I'm going to really come back and get you. Don't think that you have some kind of a moral obligation to maintain a friendship at the same level forever, right? Sometimes these things just happen. It's like, I kind of feel like it's like pen pals, that there's always a great idea that pen pals is going to be like your new best friend from another country, but it is really just a relationship full of guilt, right? Everyone feels guilty all the time. Every letter starts with, I'm so sorry, I haven't written in so long. I'm so sorry, I'm not holding up my end of this very intense relationship we intended to have. So I mentioned earlier that friendship is not the same as erotic love, so also be aware of the unhealthy signs of a friendship that is too close. A friend that would like to be between you and your husband. A friend who wants to spend hours and hours pouring their souls out to each other. I assume this may have been Adam Green Gables who brought us this idea of what we're supposed to be like as friends, bosom friends. But that is not necessarily the way it is. Just be diligent to guard your friendships from ungodly behavior, right? In the same way that you guard your own heart, hopefully. Notice if you have friendships that are falling into particular patterns all the time. Is this someone that when you're hanging out with them, you always end up gossiping or disrespecting your husbands or something? There is like something I would like to bring up in this with a whole bunch of women. It's impossible in a church like ours that everyone feels like they have a satisfactory amount of friendship, right? There's always someone looking for friends, feeling lonely, feeling left out, feeling like they don't belong. There is a misunderstanding that friendship is for people who fit in, right? Like as though if you're an odd duck, it's all over for you. You can't fit in. But being members of the body of Christ is an entirely different thing than that, right? Totally different. Members, I just read a wonderful essay by C.S. Lewis in his book, The Weight of Glory. Members are, and he talks about this, membership. Members are not identical units like so many soldiers in uniform, but more like the organs in the body that are wildly different, doing wildly different things, and that's the very reason that they are all working together on the same thing, that their difference is an important part of how they fit together. Different in every way except for the life that they maintain. If you are part of the body of Christ, you just aren't alone. I mentioned earlier we break bread with a lot of people, not just in our church, but all over, like all of the people partaking of Christ. You just simply aren't alone. Even if you are telling yourself you are, talk back to yourself. You are part of the great work that we all share. There is easy and friendly fellowship to be had with other members of the body. Just ask the Lord to show you those opportunities. One of the things, Mom mentioned this to me when we were talking about it, in counseling is that often people will say, I just don't have any friends. It's being hard for me because I can't make friends, I can't whatever. And she will often tell people, look back and think who has reached out to you. Like, think through your list. The reality is that we often say that kind of thing when we have a specific target friend that we would like to have, or a specific group that you're saying, they haven't reached out to me, so therefore no one is reaching out to me. But the reality is someone probably did, and you probably weren't interested, right? You know, like, you're probably like, not you, I'm looking for a different friend. You know, like, I'm going for another kind. That's not what I want. Think about that. So ask the Lord to show you those opportunities. And just pursue Christ, and you will find yourself in the company of friends. Right? Pursue him, and you will find yourself with all the other people who are pursuing him. In the company of friends, and with the greatest friend. Once, many years ago, I had a daughter who was sad that no one was playing with her at recess. And it was just like, I don't even know why. Nobody wants to play with me. It was like a sad time. And it's sad when it's your little preschool child being like, nobody wants to play with me. And they just stood there. And they didn't play with me. And it's easy as a mother, right, to be like, I will get on the phone and rebuke all those other children. I didn't. I wasn't going to do that. But we did tell her. I was like, you know, when you go somewhere, if you see someone standing and feeling sorry for themselves, do you feel like, I would like to do that with them? Like, you do not. Like, if someone is standing there just like, it's like, what is there to join in? Nothing. Like, there is nothing to join in. I said, you are not looking like someone that anyone wants to play with. I can't blame your class for not jumping on this opportunity. So we said, this is the rule. It was like, I love that this is the level of obedience that we were fighting here. It's like, tomorrow at school, you're going to build a bowl out of the pea gravel. Like, this is the rule. Make a bowl and make soup in it. It's like, I don't care if nobody does it with you, you're making soup in the pea gravel tomorrow. It's like, very funny. So we pick them up from school, we're like, okay, did you make soup in the pea gravel? It's like, yes. And there were leaves over by the, you know, whatever. It's all about the soup. And I was like, so who did that with you? It's like, oh, it's the whole class. Everybody. I was like, yeah, those really judgmental preschoolers that don't like you, or they just weren't attracted to your feelings. Sorry for this stuff. What was it? We've returned to the pea gravel soup bowl many times through life. It's a lesson. Do something that looks like it would be fun to do with someone, and you will find yourself with friends, right? The standing around and feeling sorry for yourself, very difficult to join in, right? And anyone who's spiritually healthy doesn't want to. They're not attracted to that. They're not going to take on all of this. So this is my admonition to you. If you want friends, start doing. If you want to have good and healthy relationships with your friends, do things together that honor Christ. Work together towards that end. Find something that you can get to know people while doing. Work on something. Get to know them in different contexts than just looking at each other for commonality. You may have nothing in common at all when you're just sitting there looking at each other, and tons in common when you are working shoulder to shoulder. Turn shoulder to shoulder and pursue Christ, and friendship will grow naturally. Remember that if you're obedient to Christ, you are a friend of His. In the words of the old hymn, what a friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear, and what a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Pursue the one ultimate gracious friend that we have, and in Him, you will be both a friend and have a friend. Thank you.